In the ongoing debate over privacy, there's a common refrain that one side loves to repeat. If you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. The phrase was often invoked when the British government decided to install millions of public surveillance cameras across the country. And it's not only the refrain of government organizations. In 2009, Google's then CEO Eric Schmidt famously had this to say about your privacy on CNBC.
If you have something that you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place.
But George Washington University law professor Daniel Solov says that this argument misunderstands privacy entirely.
People think that privacy is just about keeping secrets when it's about a lot more. It's about basic control over very important information that could have an impact on whether or not you get credit or a loan. You might receive, for instance, different pricing on certain things at the airport. You might be subject to extra screening, and you don't know if it's random or if you're on some list or what the reason is. Things can happen to you based on your information, and you have no idea what data is being used, why, and how. You have very little recourse to do anything about it.
Okay, but what about the classic and persuasive rejoinder that it protects us?
I hear this argument a lot. Any security measure that's privacy invasive must be really good. And I don't think that's true. One example is the random searches in the New York subway. Out of about 2 million daily riders, they searched a handful of people. This program was an amazing waste of money and time that was largely symbolic. There's a term that Bruce Schneier, a famous security expert, uses called security theater.
Security theater?
Yes. Making it look like you're doing something that's really helpful, but it's not. It often leads to policymakers and others not really putting to the test various security measures and seeing, are they really effective? I don't believe in privacy at all costs. But I do believe that if people are asked to give up their privacy, they better get more security in return.
So do you think we could resolve this issue if we were more transparent about our invasions of privacy?
Yes, I definitely think more transparency and letting people in the know will help. And yet, one of the challenges when it comes to data mining for terrorism, which involves trying to determine whether people are engaged in patterns of activity that look suspicious, is that when you have that greater transparency, you also tip off the terrorists as to what patterns people are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tension, and I'm not quite sure how you resolve this tension. There are certain patterns we don't want to have the government using. So what if the government uses things that you might say or read? What if they use religion? What if they use race? Certain things could be put into the profile that we as a society might think is not fair and not appropriate or even prejudiced to put in the profile.
We don't live in China or Iran, North Korea. This isn't a surveillance society. Or do you think it is a surveillance society?
This is a surveillance society. The difference between us and China is that the government there is much more totalitarian. But the tools of surveillance that they have at their disposal are the same things that our government is using.
Really? I mean, we don't block people from getting to certain websites.
We don't block. That's the difference. China blocks, and China censors, and China arrests you in the middle of the night, you know, and throws you in a prison, you know, somewhere, you know, unknown. Actually, we do that too. We just don't do it in the same extreme way that China does. But we do have all the tools of surveillance. You know, we have drones that patrol the skies. We have tracking of the internet. We have the NSA surveillance program listening in on people's phone calls. I don't think that there's a very high risk that our government's going to become totalitarian in the sense that China's government is totalitarian. But what I do think is it could affect certain groups, certain types of activities, and it's hidden. I mean, that has some totalitarian implications, but just for those people. So, hey, if you're not on that list, great for you. But if you happen to be on the list, now you're in a different world.
You said that you're not a privacy absolutist. How would you resolve this issue?
By having real balancing between privacy and security. If we understood privacy better and didn't reject it out of hand, and we actually have real scrutiny over the surveillance, we could have our security and our privacy too.
Daniel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Daniel Solove, law professor at George Washington University, is author of Nothing to Hide, The False Trade-Off Between Privacy and Security.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.